is Marketing Over Coffee with Christopher Penn and John Wall.
Good morning. Welcome to Marketing Over Coffee. I'm John Wall. Today, we have Eric Deckers with us. We have followed his career for years. He's done a ton of books, and this is actually a first. You have two books that are available now. We've got links to them as we go. We want to get the story behind where these came from and what you're doing with it, but welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. I wanted to go. I'm Christopher Penn.
I know. People just have that.
But I withheld.
I know, you've managed to hold that, because we have the same thing too. Once in a while, we'll have Katie on, and we're like, oh, wait, does she say her name, or do we say she's a guest? Like, how do we deal with this? But it's tough to, when you get grooved, you know, you're used to the sound, and you just keep running with it.
Well, whenever I listen to an episode, I always say it along with them.
You're always, the listener is always our third guest, right? That's what makes the show great, is people feel they're part of this, and it's where they're going. And we do, I'll say, we've got a bunch of links to past interviews as far as Own Media Doctrine. And when you worked with Jason Falls on the No BS Social Media book, those are both in there. But let's talk about this latest book, The 10 Commandments of Personal Branding. Master the rules that build credibility, command respect, and grow influence. Where did this one come from? What drove you to pick up the pencil this time?
Well, I knew you were a huge, huge fan of personal branding books. And I thought I need to add one more to John's big collection of personal branding books. Actually, my co-author and I, Robert Bagley, we met at we were on a panel together at a networking event in, was it late 23 or early 24? We had never met. He had written a couple books, so the 10 Commandments of Networking was his book, and I had done my Branding Yourself book years ago. And the next day he emailed me and said, hey, I've got an idea for a book. I think you and I could work very well together on this. And he pitched me the idea of 10 Commandments of Personal Branding. And so we would meet every few weeks at my favorite pizza place, Lazy Moon. Shout out to Lazy Moon. And we would talk about one of the commandments and one of the issues. And since we both brought a lot of knowledge, it was just an interesting deep dive into that particular topic, like the value you bring to relationships or the importance of thought leadership and things like that. And I would just record that, throw it up on Otter AI, and then write the chapter based on what we had talked about. And the whole thing, I think, took about 9 months, start to finish. The book's like 40,000 words, so not that big. Robert also has a relationship with a publishing company, Copilot Publishing, so getting it published was no problem. And we just did the printing and things like that through Kindle Digital Publishing, so it's all print on demand. We didn't have to pay for 5,000 copies. And so we've had this out since August of this year.
That's great. And it made me rethink my positioning on some of this stuff, because I'm always complaining about branding books, as we get so many pitches for these. But the thing is, I actually, personal branding, I'm okay with. The thing that we get is corporate branding books. There's all these people that have been CMOs at big companies who want to write the branding book. And it's just so boring and generic. It's really not saying anything that anybody can directly apply. And so that was what got me about this book, is that you've got a bunch of things that are directly applicable to people. Like literally somebody who's starting out on their career, has not done any of this stuff, can go through these steps, the 10 and your bonus 11th commandment. And there's things that they can do to make themselves more marketable, generate business, kind of do more things. Yeah, one I wanted to ask you about, ones that launched. One is value in relationships, because you talk about, first personal brand and then what is your value, but then value in a relationship. Talk more about that. Like once you've kind of figured out who you are, what goes into making how it works with the rest of the world?
So bringing value to a relationship is really the whole point of personal branding. It's one thing to be known for doing something. I'm a good writer. Fine. But how do I help other people with that? How does my being a good writer help other people? And maybe that's not the thing they need. So I'm also a good networker. And so, people who know me know that I know a lot of people and am happy to introduce others. So the value I bring to a relationship is my network of people. And so if John needs to meet somebody who does plumbing, I can make a referral to a plumber that can help you with your problem. If I know somebody who's having tax problems, I can refer them to a bookkeeper or an accountant. And that's the value that I bring to a relationship. For a lot of people, personal branding is all about that network, but also them knowing that you are not in this relationship for yourself. This is not a self-motivated, self-driven relationship. This is a, how can I help you? So we kind of stole that idea from BNI, Business Network International, because they talk about givers gain a lot. You give to gain. If you give, if you are a giver, you will gain. And so it's never a question of what can you do for me? It's more, what can I do for you? And if I do that enough times, if I give enough times, I will gain that blessing, that karma point, that whatever you call it, cool points, that comes back to me because I help enough people and sort of word spreads. And people say, well, he did this for me or he did this for a friend of mine. So I'm going to do this for him. So if you do this, this is how a lot of word of mouth happens. It's not just, hey, Eric's good at this, John's good at this, call him. It's more like, hey, Eric helped me and he's good at this. I'm going to refer him to somebody who needs it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like you said, it's not enough to have the skill. It's like, how does that intersect with what the other person is doing? How does it fit into their day? And you've got a chapter even on integrity too, which I think, you know, in this day and age with so many questions about graft and, you know, whatever the latest con is, talk to us more about that. Like how does people go out of their way to make integrity part of their brand?
It's always been a big foundation of mine is you just do what you said you would do. You know, at the very least, if you said you were going to meet me for coffee at 11 o'clock, and you don't show up, that's an integrity issue. I can't rely on you for that little thing. And if a person that I have a relationship with has a history of not meeting their obligations for the little things, I can't trust them with anything big. And so, you know, that's things like showing up. That's things like, if you're working for me, turn something in when you said you would. It's telling the truth. It's not spreading gossip. It's, you know, all of these things. If you can do those things, I pretty much can count on you to do the right thing when it's the big thing. You can't just let the little thing go and say, oh, but I'll do it on the big thing. You know, I'm sure I told you a lie about not showing up, but when I have to tell you the truth about a business deal, then I'll do it. I can't trust that. So for me, that's been a big part, but also integrity to the relationship is important. If you're always looking out for yourself, then you don't value the relationship. You only value yourself. You only value me for what I can do for you. And that's not very, is it integrous? Is, I don't know if that's a word, but you're not showing integrity if you only value the relationship for what it does for you and not us.
Now, you do have a chapter on informational interviews, and I do have to say that is like the most solid career advice that I've seen over my entire lifetime is this idea that people don't see the job market as something where you network. You know, so many people just apply for jobs that get posted, and I've seen stats that say even that more than half of the job market is the underlying market where people already have connections to people. And, you know, when a position comes together, there's already a specific person that they have in mind for that. So talk more about that. How can people, you know, do more informational interviews and take that power of that to their advantage?
Well, and the big statistic pre-AI, you know, pre-AI applications and reviews, the big number was 30% of came about because of job boards. And the other 70% came about because of networks. And this statistic came to us from Career Builder. They said, we suck at our jobs. We only do it right 30% of the time. You don't need us 70% of the time. And yet I've known people who have said, my full-time job is to look for a new job. And I remember once speaking at you'd call it a support group for people who had lost their jobs. And it was kind of, you know, they would go talk about different job openings that they had heard of or had applied for. And there was one guy who stood up and said, because I had given this talk, said, well, my job is to apply for jobs and I'm just hitting the job board. I went back a year later to give the same talk, and guess who was still there? So the strategy is basically you work your network, but not just calling people you know, not just posting a couple times on Twitter or on LinkedIn, I need a job, and hoping for the best, but rather you start with somebody you do know, or somebody you want to work for, or somebody you would like to know, and you call them up, email them, and say, hey, I'm looking into going into your field. I'm curious how you did it. I want to talk to you about your career path, and people will want to talk to you. If you call them and say, I'm looking for a job, they don't want to talk to you. But if you call them and say, I want you to talk about yourself for an hour, and I'm going to listen and take notes, they absolutely want to have that conversation. Nobody has ever asked them that. And so they would love to do that. And so you sit down with them, you talk, you take good notes, you listen. This is not your interview. This is their interview. This is their time to talk. So you just listen. And at the end, you ask two very important questions. Number one, do you know anybody else I can talk to? And because you were such a good listener and you took notes, they say, yes, I do. You should talk to my friend, Susan. Number two, great. Can you introduce me? And you have to ask that question because if I'm talking to John and John says, call Susan, and then I contact Susan and say, John told me to contact you, she'll be suspicious because she'll say, did he really? That seems odd. But if there's an email introduction between John, me, and Susan, and John says, Susan, meet Eric, Eric, Susan, then that's a warm introduction, and she is more likely to respond when I then email next and say, hey, this is great. John talked about you a little bit. I would love to meet you for coffee. And then I start the whole process again. And I talk to Susan, have two questions, talk to Omar, have two questions, and on and on and on. Occasionally you'll get lucky and somebody will know two people and you get two introductions and now you have two chains going. So I know people who have done this and they've gotten job interviews, they've gotten internships, they've gotten jobs because of this, just by pursuing that chain of interviewing people. They never once filled out an application. They bypassed the whole applicant tracking system, the AI system, because they talked to real people. And if you spent 10 hours a week doing that instead of 40 hours a week on a job board, A, it's less disheartening. B, you're going to find all the good coffee shops in town. But C, it will ultimately enrich your network and get you to where you need to be.
That's excellent. Okay, we have another book to talk about too, but we just have to take a second. We want to thank Next Insurance for their support of Marketing Over Coffee. You know how we're always talking about protecting your brand? Well, what about protecting your business? If you're a marketer, freelancer, or running a small agency, you already juggle a dozen things: clients, campaigns, deadlines, cash flow. But here's the thing, one small mishap, a client dispute or a contract issue can set you back fast. That's where Next Insurance comes in. They're built for small businesses and they make it ridiculously easy to get covered. You can do it all online in minutes, no calls, no paperwork, no hassle. Your business can be covered today. With transparent pricing, flexible plans, and instant proof of insurance, Next helps you protect your work, your team, and your reputation so one mistake doesn't undo years of hustle. And here's the kicker. You can save up to 30% and get coverage for as little as $1 a day. Because protecting your business shouldn't be complicated, it should be smart. Head to nextinsurance.com/MOC to get your quote today and see how easy business insurance can be. That's nextinsurance.com/MOC. Get your free quote today. Yeah, I was just talking about this with the Mass Founders Network, the importance of getting insurance rolling. I mean, there's so many levels why it's important, right? And like we just mentioned there, you don't want to lose your house or your financial assets because of what's going on in your startup. But then there's also the next level of, you know, risk management. By taking the effort to get into insurance and make sure that you're properly covered, you're just making your business operate better and safer, which is great. And then the other one that I love, the fact that they're talking about getting coverage same day. That's huge. So I've seen so many startups where this happens. You reach a certain point when your customers get large enough, you're going to have to go through their procurement department and they're going to demand that you have insurance. So if you're a growing business, sooner or later, you're going to hit somebody that's not going to close a deal unless you can prove you've got a policy in place. So being able to get coverage in a day is just huge. You can, you know, if you've got somebody on the line for end of quarter, you're not going to lose the deal because you don't have insurance coverage. So yeah, it's, you know, I know it's not fun, but it's just, you've got to do it and it sets you up for success going forward. The link is in the show notes too. Just go over to marketingovercoffee.com for this episode, click through, check it out. And we thank them for their support of the show. The new book is Wither Utopia. It's a fantastic premise. This idea that basically all of the conservative Americans died off in a mass event and the liberals took over. But of course, a few years in, everything is going to hell yet again. Where did you come up with this? What was the driving force behind writing this?
Well, I wrote the foreword 2 months after the pandemic started. And that's where I explained how basically all the conservatives in the entire world died because they politicized a new pandemic. And basically what became the worst behavior we saw was the jumping off point for this second pandemic. The problem was they thought, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk like the last one was. And it had a 99% mortality rate. So they were all very surprised when they died. The premise was I needed all the conservatives in the world to be gone. And I thought, rapture? No. You know, some other mass event? You know, how do we get rid of half of them? And I thought, let's just do the pandemic. And so the idea was I wanted just a straight liberal-only world because they're the ones who screw things up. And ultimately, the moral of the story is you have to have the other side. You have to have someone to push against. And even in the story, when they are the, you know, the liberals are the ones in power in this tiny fictional town of Appleseed, Ohio, they still try to create an opposing side. They're still looking for an enemy, only the enemy is no longer there. So they start in on themselves. And so when I first came up with the idea, I thought, one group is going to be mad at me for this, and I don't know which. Maybe it'll be both, you know, because the conservatives will go, why'd you kill us off? And the liberals will go, why'd you make us look like idiots? And I thought, well, maybe I'll get lucky and they'll all be mad. But that was sort of where I wanted to go with this, is I wanted it to be, I basically just had to get rid of half the people in the world to make the story come true.
Right. And so now you've done satire in the past. Mackinac Island Nation is a fantastic book that I loved reading. We'll have links to that in the show notes. But in a similar vein, too, of kind of just this, you know, something goes horribly wrong and people jump in to try and fix it and hilarity ensues, basically, is the recipe. But what were some of the bigger things that you were trying to address? I like the idea of having to have someone to push against, of having to have an enemy. Like, talk more about that.
One of the things that I did when the book starts out, it starts at the Appleseed College of the Arts, which again is completely made up. But because these are all liberals and children of liberals, protesting has been built into the school curriculum. And they need protest points to graduate. And they find that all of their protests are pretty much being spoon-fed to them, and the results are already guaranteed, like protesting a residence hall name change. It happened before they even got the points that they needed to get. And so several students said, we're sick of this. We want to become conservatives. That's the only true protest we can have. It's the only real change that we can make is if we become the complete opposite of what is around us. And so these these students create the, I think it's Students for a Conservative Future, which immediately gets them blasted on campus and people try to get them kicked out and canceled for it.
That's great. And so how much of this comes from your own life and things that you've seen? Did you have something that you were trying to do with it, or did you just have the idea and run with it to see where it goes? You know, where did the rest of it come from?
I have seen a lot of this, you know, this cancellation. I even created an app called Canceled, spelled K-N-C-L-D. And it's sort of like, if you remember the old clout, K-L-O-U-T, where we had clout scores based on their social media efforts. They had canceled based on their social justice efforts. And if your canceled store dropped below a certain number, you were sent for voluntary re-education. So it had to stay up above a certain score. And so you could get canceled. Well, being in Orlando, we have a strong literary community, and the slam poet subcommunity always has a lot of drama, like a high school dance, just drama going on all the time. They're always arguing with each other. And I would watch them cast somebody out and then cast them as the villain and cancel that person. And if somebody said something slightly less liberal and acceptable, you got booted and eaten. And I thought this is a great model for what society has sort of become and what this canceled app represents. So I completely fictionalized the things that were happening, but they were certainly inspired by some of the high school drama I saw among some of my fellow poets, or not fellow poets, but some of the poets in the area.
Yeah, that is interesting, isn't it? There are groups that identify as saying, well, we're kind of fair and we listen to everyone. But there's always that moment of truth when, you know, the stage is limited or funds are not there, where suddenly the axe does come out and people start, you know, falling to the wayside. Having done this book now, has this changed your thoughts about how this all works? Or are you basically cemented that, like, these are the normal problems that we deal with? Like, what's your take now on?
I'm kind of the mind that these are the normal problems we deal with. And this really didn't change my mind about anything, but it's more like somebody who can look at their family and see that, yeah, we're also dysfunctional. We also have that weird uncle and that, you know, the person that we don't want to talk politics with at Thanksgiving. And just, you recognize that it's a problem. You don't try to fix it. You just kind of look on it as sort of that bemused anthropologist. What's going on? And so that's still how I look at sort of my community and my political side is, yeah, this is just, it's fun to watch. I'm Michael Jackson with the popcorn meme.
Just watch it unfold and yeah, or all go down in flames as it's part of what's happening. All right. So, you know, where do you find the time to do this stuff? You've got multiple books coming out. You teach a number of courses, two college courses, and have other events. Talk to us about your workflow and how you maintain your productivity.
So a lot of time management. Big shout out to Todoist. I love the Todoist app. It gamifies my to-do list, and I try to get through everything. And if I've got anything that I want to read, watch, listen to, along with the tasks that I have to do, that all goes on Todoist. Meetings that I scheduled on Google Calendar get pushed to Todoist. And that's how I get a lot of things done. But then I also know that certain days are for certain tasks. Like the weekends, I always write my novels. And I go to Lazy Moon or I go to local McDonald's and I sit for 3 hours or so and write. Thursdays, I write a newspaper humor column. I've done that for 30 years. And Thursday night is always column night. We don't do anything Thursday night, or at least I don't do anything Thursday nights because it's column night, which will be a problem this month in December because Thursday night is my anniversary. And then a week later, it's Christmas. And then it's New Year's Day. And so I have to write columns in advance. But I know Thursday night at 10 o'clock, I'm going to be itching going, did I send my column? I need to write my column.
Thursdays suck. That's just my mantra here at the house because it's the same deal. Thursday is when MOC drops and goes out. And so, yeah, every Thursday is ruined. And because of that, everybody wants to do everything on Thursday. For some reason, I can never get away from that. All right. Yeah, I will check out Todoist. Actually, I live and die by Apple Notes, you know, but it is the same exact thing. I've got kind of like, okay, here's the five things that must get done today. And, you know, there's the second tier things. But having an app that manages that more, that might be worthwhile. So I will check that out and dig into that. How about, so talking about the holiday and everything going on, what's on your gift list? What are you watching here? Anything that you're would, you know, want to get for the new year?
My wife and I recently watched all the episodes of Only Murders in the Building. I had seen the first three seasons. She hadn't watched it at all. So we went through all of them. I'm looking forward to the new Knives Out movie coming out this weekend from when we're recording this. Other than that, none of the shows that I watch are on. I've gone through them all. So Shorzy, What We Do in the Shadows. Well, I've got one more season of that. But most of the TV shows that I enjoy, all comedies, are in hiatus, or the season ended, or the show ended. So I have to find new shows. I do like to watch old 1990s British murder mysteries. So like A Touch of Frost. If you watch it on Tubi, T-U-B-I, you can watch it with commercials, unless you watch on your browser with an ad blocker.
Does it actually pull the ads, or do you get blank screen for 30 seconds?
No, it just goes.
Really?
Like the show keeps going.
Oh, that's a killer hack. Okay, we'll throw that out there for folks. I did not realize that there was a workaround for that. That's amazing.
Yeah, like Adblock Plus.
I saw a post this week, so you'll, because you're a fan of What We Do in the Shadows, somebody was just joking about how, okay, Daniel Craig is gone. They should really lean into Roger Moore-style James Bond, because that way we could get Matt Berry to be James Bond.
That would be awesome.
Isn't that? I was like, oh my God, that is the coolest thing I have. That's bigger than Richard Iowati hosting Jeopardy. I was like, oh, Matt Berry as James Bond would just be totally fantastic. He could,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, tear that up. So,
did you ever see Toast?
Yes. Because I got into the IT Crowd. And so at that point, I was like, oh my God, what else has he done? And Toast, the only problem with Toast is I sit there as an American and I know I'm only getting like 60% of the jokes. You know, there's all these jokes about British actors and British theater. And I know that they're just all whizzing over my head as I'm sitting there. But yeah, there's still enough just total absurdity there. He is just amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have links to both the books in the show notes. You can check out the text line at 617-812-5494, or you can sign up for the newsletter over at marketingovercoffee.com. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I had a good time.
All right, that'll do it for this week. So until next week, enjoy the coffee.
You've been listening to Marketing Over Coffee. Christopher Penn blogs at christopherspenn.com. Read more from John J. Wall at jw5150.com. The Marketing Over Coffee theme song is called Mellow G by Funk Masters, and you can find it at Musical.ly from Mevio, or follow the link in our show notes.